you believe assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here with you on this fine day. Thank you for the round of applause. Always very humbling. Thank you again. It always comes down to how the police view the public. And I've said it several times on the show. The people who carry concealed weapons are generally the biggest supporters of law enforcement. They are the biggest supporters of people following the law and the biggest supporters of punishment for those who are convicted of breaking the law. So you've got an inherently law-abiding group that is inherently pro do what the Constitution says and follow the laws and rules of society. However, you've got the people who were actually hired into a job to do things such as enforce those, and I mean law enforcement, who are not reciprocally, honored by that profession. They are not big on CCW holders. Now, I'm not talking about the average beat cop themselves, more so the administration. Certainly some of the beat cops, but generally the cops on the street are a little bit more into understanding what's going on. It's the administrators, on the other hand, that are away from the general public and away from actually doing the actual job are a few steps removed from what's going on in the public's eye when it comes to law enforcement. It's similar to the legislators on Capitol Hill. They're out of touch more so than what you might find someone on a town council or a school board or a city council. Not to say that all of those people around the country are really in tune with things, but certainly they are much more so than the legislators on Capitol Hill. So when we get law enforcement groups that are anti-CCW expansion measures and anti-open carry measures, they lump every law-abiding, gun-toting American in with the criminal element who so chooses to use guns for illegal purposes, not paying any attention to their own training videos, that have criminals in prison admitting, look, if somebody's got a gun on them, there is no way I am going to go after them and try to make them my victim. Some people believe, some anti-gunners falsely believe that if someone's got a gun, criminals all of a sudden want to go after them to try and get the gun away from them. Now imagine, if you wanted a gun, would you try to get one that was in the hands of another human being? Or would you try to get one that was all alone, all by itself, that had no possibility of being turned against you if you went to go get it? Would you try to take it from another human being, from another person? Or would you try to take it when it's sitting in a drawer or left out somewhere? How would you try to go about it? It's the same thing the criminals are going to do. You're going to get two or three criminals, or even one for that matter, trying to take a gun and disarm an armed citizen for it. You don't see the criminals going after the guns that the cops have. You're not going to see them going after these cops trying to steal their guns from them. It just doesn't happen. It's usually through burglaries and home invasions is when you're going to find that sort of thing going on. So that argument really doesn't hold much water at all. I don't know why they think it does, but more about this when we return. I'm Bill Carnes on 2A Radio.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, Don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3. Listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
Okay. So I want to read to you a little op-ed piece that was published recently called What Happens When You Buy a Gun? Many people think that when you buy a gun, it has an inherent spirit of evil and bellicosity that takes you over. A chip grows on your shoulder, and you begin to look for affronts that you can settle with force. Ultimately, you will succumb completely to the weapon's mystical influences and become a mass murderer. The answer to that is no. It doesn't happen. Last week, I had a discussion with a business owner who recently bought his first firearm. He bought a 9mm handgun. He and his 20-year-old son have been going to a range and learning how to shoot. He is considering applying for a concealed carry permit, and I asked him why, after 40 years of living, he was doing this. He said that the direction of our current administration in Washington had made him afraid that guns would be outlawed or harder to obtain. When I asked why that was a concern for him personally, he said that he thought it was important to be able to defend his home and family. There's a growing conviction that while our police system in this country is among the best in the world, it can't help you at the moment a crime is being committed. Indeed, if there's a patrol car in the driveway, and I doubt any criminal would be dumb enough to try a home invasion there. I like the observation of examiner Daniel White, who said that police are our avengers, not our protectors. This husband and father had come to the crisis point where he decided to invest in his own defense rather than choose a reliance on the police to keep him and his family safe. He perceived that the window to make that choice was closing, and like all Americans since November 4th, had decided to buy a firearm and ammunition and choose self-reliance. What happens to you when you buy a gun? My own experience and conversations with others have convinced me that buying a gun solidifies your mind, your own mind, the previously gauzy perception that the government can't do everything for you. The most basic thing is your personal safety, the safety of your family and your home. Buying a gun is your decision to rely on yourself. If buying a gun has any influence, I think it is that you become one of them. You perhaps see more clearly that a gun is a tool like a stapler. It has no spirit of its own. You begin to see that gun owners are just regular folks as you yourself are. You know yourself pretty well. You know that you would not trade your present life for years in jail in order to kill a person who cut you off in traffic or cheated you on a basement remodel. I am comfortable with the notion that anybody at random walking the streets might be legally carrying a gun. I believe that, like me, they do everything possible to avoid pulling their weapon or firing it. Owning and practicing with a gun starts you down a path of thinking that leads to more self-determination. I think this is why many gun owners are more aware of the U.S. Constitution than folks are, and are more aware of the natural rights of man that informed that document. That in turn leads to thoughts of an overbearing federal government that was not the vision of our founding fathers. Gun owners see the states and local government being more responsive to their day-to-day needs as regular citizens, and Washington becoming more and more representative to Washington. The state sovereignty movement and the guns made in Montana and now Tennessee are indications of a populace growing impatient with a federal government that has overstepped its enumerated constitutional powers. I think gun owners are more sensitive to liberty, where it comes from, and when it is threatened. Buying a gun doesn't introduce an alien spirit into you. It's just an outward sign of an awakening mind. God bless America. Now, that's an op-ed piece that I found this last weekend and decided to read that for you today. And I truly believe that this is right down the line, especially as it glances on touches on, rather, the anti-gun mindset that believes once you buy a gun, you are all of a sudden going to be this empowered homicidal maniac. I have to tell you, my own father is an anti-gun guy. Calls himself conservative, but yet he's at least conservative thinking. And he doesn't believe in guns. A couple other things that more conservative people would think that have really just fallen apart as he's gotten older. And he owns a gun. However, he's absolutely hypocritical in the fact that same thing that Rosie O'Donnell would be, or the same thing that Feinstein would be, Dianne Feinstein, where they have concealed weapons permits, they own guns, but they say it's okay for me, just not for you, because I don't trust you. If I don't know you, I can't trust you. I know myself, so I can trust me. The thing is, most people, when they buy a gun, they realize they can trust themselves. So the other people who are out there who can legally own and possess, buy, own, possess a gun, are of the same mindset. It actually awakens you to what's going on in this country, because that is a right that is introduced with having a piece of hardware. And it's written out. I mean, the Bill of Rights is not the only rights. It's just, as it says in the Constitution, it's just kind of a highlight reel of certain rights that absolutely we want to make very, very clear. But they didn't put down every single right that the human beings have, because that would take way too long, way too much paper, and have made this Constitution ultimately complicated or just thick as a dictionary. Well, we don't have that. It's supposed to be interpreted properly. And the federal government and all of the branches thereof under the executive branch don't like you carrying guns. They believe, like the anti-gunners believe, and even more so than that, what you've got is you've got the federal government that has been taking, seizing, and keeping power along this path. They've been growing larger and larger. Once they grab power, they never give it back. They take more and more and more. And it gets to a point where if your citizenry is armed, that taking more and more power becomes difficult. And when that's all you really do is take power away from the people, that's what you've got. Now, if that weren't enough, I want to talk just for a moment about this whole cap and trade bill that went through last Friday that's getting so much airtime, so much media play. Okay, the original cap and trade, which is H.R. 2454, was introduced May 15th, 2009, and was about 1,000 pages in length. It was replaced on June 23rd as a new House resolution, 2998, and it had 1,200 pages. 2.5 days later, at 3:09 a.m. on the 26th of June, a 300-page amendment was filed to H.R. 2998, now making it a 1,500-page law. Just a proposal. 1,500 pages. 16 hours later, the House voted and passed the bill. Now, I've got to ask you, who throughout anywhere in the entire House chamber was able to read and digest those 1,500 pages from the 23rd to the 26th? Most of the legislators hadn't even been given a copy of the bill, and certainly not the amendment. But yet the Democrats, and this is absolutely true, conspired. There was a conspiracy amongst the House Democrats to put this piece out there and pass it without reading it. Anyone who actually voted for that piece, that you can find out if it was your representative, call them and let them know. They have potentially doomed their career, and you, along with all the other people who did not see the law followed or the representation made, will be working very hard at replacing them next election cycle, and we've got to do it. We replaced them when they passed the assault weapons bill back in 93, whenever the hell it was. I think it was 92. We replaced them then. We should replace them now, this whole cap-and-trade thing. The thing is, the election isn't for another about 16 or 17 months, and America's memory is generally quite very short. We need to remember this. We need to let them know this is the last time that's ever going to happen. And we need to stop this in the Senate. We need to stop this bill in the Senate. It was absolutely ramrodded through the House. And that whole, and it was all conspired through, had everything to do with the Obama regime in the White House to get through. So forget about this transparency. Forget about this posted on the internet for 5 days for the public to look. We got completely screwed on this deal. We need to stop it in the upper house, up in the Senate. And we need to find every representative who voted for this bill and replace them next election cycle with a new duly elected representative and someone who's actually going to represent that district properly, with forthright, and legally. That's what we need to do. Got more to come on the show. Stick around through the break. This is Bill Carnes, your host on 2A Radio.
Have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, live, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
As you can probably tell, we're playing around with some new bumpers for the show today. If you have any comments, send me an email. Okay, another little... this was wonderful. I saw the writing on the wall for this one, as most of us probably did. You got Judge Sonia Sotomayor trying to become Justice Sonia Sotomayor, and she's now had, I believe it's a total of about 10 cases go before the Supreme Court that she's ruled upon. Every single thing that has gone in front of the Supreme Court that she has ruled on has been overturned, except for one. However, they disagreed with her logic on that one. So one was not overturned, but the justices of the Supreme Court did disagree with her. So she's batting zero, and she's been up to the plate, I believe, 10 times now. The Connecticut firefighters were vindicated by the Supreme Court ruling. What happened was there was a bunch of firefighters that tested for a bunch of open captains and lieutenant spots in New Haven, Connecticut. Now, a lot of white firefighters passed the test, a lot of Hispanic firefighters passed the test, a lot of black firefighters passed the test, and a number of Asian firefighters passed the test. However, when they actually made the list and you start at the very top score and you work your way down, there was only two minorities who would be promoted to lieutenant or captain amongst the entire list. And those two minorities were both Hispanic, if I remember correctly. There was not a single Asian nor a single black who took the test that were going to get promoted. All the rest were white. I believe it's going to be like 8 captains and 17 lieutenants, if memory serves correctly, whatever the numbers were. So the city of New Haven, Connecticut, who controls the fire department, said, we need to retest. Obviously, this test didn't offer enough racial diversity within the questions. So we don't want to just promote a bunch of people because they're white and they're a bunch of white men. We want to promote people based on all sorts of ethnic and sexual orientations and genders and what have you. So we're going to not honor that test. We're going to kick it off to the side, and we're going to not promote anybody until we can have a new test developed, which will have more social diversification. So the people who were on the list to get promoted to captains and lieutenants were really pretty pissed about this whole deal, so they took it to court. The district court, they lost. State court, they lost. In the second Circuit Court of Appeals where Sotomayor was. They lost. So then they appealed to Supreme Court. So let me see if I actually have a bit of it. I don't actually have any of the actual decision, but it was 5-4, as you can imagine. It was right down the same line as D.C. versus Heller. You've got the conservative judges who are actually looking at the Constitution and the base, and then you've got the liberal judges who are looking at it for more of a, well, it would be nice if maybe we could consider doing this. All it is was reverse discrimination, which was exactly the point that the attorneys that were representing these white firefighters were putting out there, that this is reverse discrimination. Imagine if everybody on this list were black and two whites were there and they said, yeah, you know, this is going to be way too many blacks to promote, way too many blacks, or way too many Hispanics to promote, or way too many Asians. Or maybe they have a huge group of people who were, I don't know, Mormons. So, okay, there's way too many Mormons we're about to promote. Maybe it's a religious thing. Or, you know, there's way too many gays that pass this. I mean, of all the people who passed this test, like 70% are gay. We can't have that. Now, what it was straight Christian firefighters that were white. Actually, I don't know if they're Christian or not. But they were white firefighters that passed this test. And they were being denied the promotion because they were white men. That's what it was. So if you put any other race, any other gender, any other sexual orientation, and they were the ones who are going to get the vast majority of the jobs, New Haven, Connecticut would not have come to the conclusion of, well, we need to retest this because we want more diversification. So they did. Well, Sotomayor cited against the white firefighters. And they didn't even, all they did was they said, you know, we're gonna uphold the lower court's ruling. And that's all they said. They did not write an opinion. However, one of the other judges involved in that decision wrote an opinion that said he was deeply, deeply disturbed that the judges on the Second Circuit, Sotomayor was one of, never actually wrote a legal opinion for their basis to kick the thing out of court and say, we're not going to really do anything other than agree with the lower court. He was deeply disturbed that they didn't even bother to look at the Constitution, cite any law, cite any court case, or even offer an opinion as to why that was their decision. So, of course, it made it to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court came out and said, wrong answer. You cannot do that, New Haven, Connecticut. You've got to honor this test. If you want to go about creating a new test down the road, that's fine. But this one, you put out there, people studied, they had a lot of time and effort involved in it. You've got to honor it. That's all there is to it. I want to applaud the Supreme Court in doing that. They did, however, put off one case, and that is the case on whether or not a piece that came out that was anti-Hillary Clinton that was put out during the campaign was considered a movie or a campaign ad. They have a special session coming up in September to hear more arguments on that. They'll rule on it probably late this year. Stick around through the break. More to come. This is Bill Carnes on 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
So today's riot has to do with a piece that came out of the Brady Center for Gun, or to Prevent Gun Violence website. I like to call them the Brady Gun Haters. This is called Law Enforcement and Gun Violence Prevention Groups Urge Massachusetts High Court to Uphold Safe Gun Storage Law. And the first appellate court is to hear a Second Amendment challenge to this safe storage law. The Brady Gun Haters, joined by law enforcement and other gun violence prevention groups, filed for a friend of the court brief today in Massachusetts. This is a couple days ago. In the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court, urging the court to uphold a life-saving gun safety law requiring that guns be secured to prevent accidents and unauthorized use. The case, Commonwealth versus Runyon, will mark the first time an appellate court considers a challenge to a safe gun storage law following the U.S. Supreme Court's Second Amendment ruling in D.C. versus Heller. The Runyon case involves a government appeal of a lower court ruling citing the Second Amendment in dismissing an indictment against a parent who failed to secure a semi-automatic rifle from his severely handicapped teenage son. Now, I'm going to interject here before I continue on with this story. First of all, these are gun violence, anti-gun violence groups. But what they're doing is they're now getting their nose into something that's not gun violence, it's a tragedy. If there's a guy who just fails to secure a gun from his kid, and the kid does something bad with it and hurts himself, I believe the kid killed himself on the deal. What happens is these guys want to have a state law for everyone. Rather than punishing this one guy and educating people, look, this is not the sort of thing that you want to do, especially if you've got a handicapped kid. Don't do this. Be more responsible with your guns. No, they want to have a law that affects everyone. It's not about the guns. It's about the control. That's what gun control is. It's controlling you through your guns, or lack thereof. So it had nothing to do with violence. It had to do with an accident. Accidents happen, no matter what the laws are. Accidents happen. And no matter what the law is, I will tell you this. I don't care what law they may pass within the state of Nevada, or that affects the state of Nevada. I don't really care. I am going to store my guns the way I choose to store my guns in my home. It is my property. It is my right, and I will not be dictated to on how to store my guns. Now, there are no laws affecting those citizens of us here in Nevada on such an issue. But I'm telling you, if they pass one, I will be violating that law. So I'm giving you a heads up early on. Daniel Weiss, who's the senior attorney for the Brady Center to Take Your Guns Away From You, commented, Massachusetts safe gun storage law protects children from gun accidents and is wholly permissible under the Second Amendment. With 9 children and teens killed every day by gun violence, we must ensure that guns are kept securely from children. That is such a disconnect, it's ridiculous, which is exactly what the Brady Center to Steal Your Guns and Prevent You from Your Rights campaign is all about. They don't really care about putting something in its proper place. They want to lump it all together to make it sound far worse than it really is. They make it sound as though 9 kids each day are getting a hold of guns and having an accident. No, it's through violence. And their definition of children is people under the age of 25. I think it's 25 and unders. They consider a child. Now, in the rest of the United States of America, it's somebody 17 and under. Well, they out on the next 8 years. Why does the Brady Center to Take Your Guns and Deny Your Rights keep people up to 25 years listed as children in their stats? And they say, you know, we call people 25 and under children for our stats, just so you know. The people that don't check into that actually think actual kids when they could be fully grown adults. Why do they do that up to the age of 25? The reason is the vast majority of victims of gun violence are urban incidents. They are generally in the lower economic class, regardless of race or gender. Those are generally where they are, and it generally happens to people age 25 and below, 16 to 25. I think 15 to 25 is actually the Justice Department statistics. So what the Brady Center to Screw You Out of Your Gun Rights campaign has done is they've decided, wow, that's the area. We are going to call people children up to that, and we're going to let everybody know that we do that on the website. We're just not going to talk about it when we actually do our pieces. So that's a bunch of bull, what this Daniel Weiss said. Former Massachusetts Attorney General Scott Harshbarger and the law firm Prosecutor Rose are representing the Brady Center and other groups filing the brief pro bono. Mr. Harshbarger stated, "The court should uphold Massachusetts' safe gun storage law, which is one of the many life-saving gun laws that have made Massachusetts one of the safest states in the nation in terms of gun violence." Now, I'd like to address that. How do we know that that actually prevents any sort of problems? Now, I'm going to share just a little tidbit with you. I haven't shared with a bunch of people, but I will share it with you right now. I'll let the cat out of the bag. The main reason that I got into training people how to use guns properly and defensively is this. It makes me absolutely stricken with unbelievable sadness when I hear that a kid gets a hold of a gun that either A, shouldn't be out, or B, the parents never taught the kids about the guns. And they use this gun just playing with it, not knowing anything about it, and they inadvertently shoot and kill themselves, a friend, a sibling, whatever it may be, someone else around them, simply because they don't know. Now, I started teaching people how to use guns so that they would be more aware of guns, more aware of the operation, more aware of how they work and their potential injury or death factor if used improperly, or in some cases used properly in defense, that they would not be the type of person to leave a gun that could be used in a situation such as a kid picking it up and causing death or serious bodily harm to themselves or someone else around them because they simply didn't know. Having said that, there's absolutely no way to measure my success in my profession of doing that. No way at all. There's no way to say, okay, in the 12, 13 years that I've been doing this, there's no way to go back and take anybody I ever trained and erase that training and see how many of those may have had an accident in the home. Many of those thousands, literally thousands and thousands of people I've trained, and see if they would have had an accident. It's an unmeasurable amount of success. I've got to believe that it works. But when a tragedy is averted because somebody doesn't do something ignorant or doesn't do something stupid, you just don't know. However, they're actually trying to put a signifying mark on how this law works in Massachusetts when they literally have no idea whether it works or not. All it is it's a control of people through controlling their guns. In a brief in support of Middlesex District Attorney Jerry Leone's appeal, argues that a lower court improperly dismissed an indictment under Massachusetts Safe Gun Law. This law allows self-defense gun use, but requires that firearms be stored when not carried by or under the control of an owner or authorized user. The U.S. Supreme Court in D.C. versus Heller struck down the district's gun laws that broadly barred handgun possession and prohibited use of a firearm in the home, even for self-defense. The court in Heller, however, specifically noted that its ruling does not call into question laws regulating the storage of firearms to prevent accidents, such as Massachusetts' Safe Gun Storage Law. So that right there gives me not a whole bunch of hope in Massachusetts that this is going to be overturned. The brief explains how studies have found a direct correlation between improper gun storage and accidental shooting deaths, and that unintentional shooting deaths among children have been reduced by 23% in states with safe storage laws. The brief cites Massachusetts' long history of legislation keeping citizens safe from gun violence, including safe gun storage laws dating back to the time of ratification of the Second Amendment. The groups on the brief are the Brady Center to Screw You Out of Your Gun Rights, because we don't really care, International Brotherhood of Police Officers, legal community against violence, and then another group to screw you out of your guns. Massachusetts Chief of Chiefs of Police, Massachusetts Million Mom March chapter. There's not even a million people in Massachusetts. And the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence and Stop Handgun Violence. So these are the groups that are trying to get your guns. Now, notice in here, there are two different law enforcement groups, International Brotherhood of Police Officers and the Massachusetts Chiefs of Police. Again, as I've been saying, individual cops generally have a better view of armed citizens than the groups in which represent them, and certainly the groups which represent chiefs and sheriffs. They are not big fans of you having guns. Now, they are the servants. The police community are our servants. Remember the whole to serve and protect? It's almost as though they want to treat all of us in the U.S. like LAPD treated Rodney King back in 1990. It's almost like that. It's almost like they want to change on their car from to protect and to serve to we treat you like a king. And the thing is, they don't even have to offer protection anymore. Supreme Court said so. Now, they don't even want to service us because they're going against pro-gun groups and pro-gun legislation and potentially pro-gun decisions of courts on a regular basis. So the people who rampantly, vehemently support the police do not get reciprocal support from those same police organizations. And again, I want to say it's the organizations, not the individual law enforcement. Some law enforcement officers don't like people having guns at all because they believe that they as a cop are trained, you as a citizen are not. Well, I've got to tell you, I would say there is probably a handful, literally a handful, of law enforcement officers in the U.S. today with the training that I've got. And I didn't get that training when I was a cop. I got that training outside. Now, there's a lot of different training groups that exist within the U.S. that specialize in training military and law enforcement. Now, a lot of them will also do civilian, but they won't teach the high-end tactics, the high-end knowledgeable stuff, and they won't share the high-end gear with the citizens. They reserve that for police and law enforcement. And I believe that is absolutely backwards. I believe it's totally backwards. That is putting the cart before the horse. Because the ultimate authority in this country is the citizens of the United States who are protected. They have their Second Amendment protections. So for a legitimate training organization to say, look, we'll do basic gun handling stuff with the tens of millions of Americans. We'll offer to the tens of millions of Americans who own guns. But to the 100,000 law enforcement officers throughout the country, or however many it is, a couple hundred thousand law enforcement officers we've got throughout the country, we're going to offer you ultra-high-end training. And we're going to forget about the tens of millions over here and go with a couple hundred thousand over here. And you're going to have to get your department to pay for it, which ain't going to happen. We're also going to offer it to law, to military, because you guys need high-end training too. And I would agree, military does need high-end training. And you don't usually get it within the military itself, because they just don't operate that way. They just don't. These large political bureaucratic organizations, to try to get them to actually upgrade their training, it's a near impossibility to do that. So oftentimes you get contractors that come in from the outside, which is what I did, to try and better the training. When you've got a group that denies that sort of training to the citizens of the U.S., the actual citizenry, you've got a problem. Now, Gunsight in Arizona used to do that back in the 1980s and early into the 1990s. They actually would reserve their highest-end courses strictly for military and law enforcement. And I find there to be a problem with that. They then changed. As a matter of fact, the new owners that are there and the new director of operations, a guy by the name of Ed Head, who spent a career as a Border Patrol officer and also did a lot of training with firearms there. Ed's a great guy. He's got a great background. Highly recommend Gunsight. They've got an excellent program. as well as Thunder Ranch with Clinton Heidi Smith. They specialize in training. Anybody who wants to come take a course, but they really tend to train, for the most part, the citizens, you know, just private citizens. Same thing with Frontside outside of Las Vegas. They cater to private citizens. The reason that these groups cater to private citizens are they know that the private citizens and the guns out there in the hands of the law-abiding citizens secure this country from undue violence. If you took all the guns away from everyone, only the people who follow the law would actually give up their guns. Only the criminals would keep them, and then nothing would be holding them at bay because the police don't have to provide protection. They can literally sit in the donut house and wait for the call. Okay, we got a call. There was another mass murder and robbery going on. All right, well, we'll roll out there and take pictures and take reports and try to find the guys. And then when they're done, they go back and they roll back to the donut shop. And then they get a call, okay, another mass shooting just happened. Or they could call up and say, there's a mass shooting going on right now. Okay, well, let us know when it's over and the guys have cleared out so we can go take our report. That's really the job of police now. They don't have to offer protection, and they don't. Just the way it is. So protection is up to us. If we allow these laws to get passed, if we allow the courts to continue to circumvent the Constitution, and if we allow the executive branch to go beyond their authority level and start administering regulatory laws or regulatory rules against our guns, we've lost. We need to prevent that. Stick around through the break. More to come. This is Bill Carnes on 2A Radio.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
So I want everyone to understand that I am not by any means anti-law enforcement. What I am is anti-law enforcement oppression. Last week I read a story about the mayor in Shreveport, Louisiana, giving instructions to the Shreveport PD that they, when they pull someone over, come into contact with someone, at that moment, the person that they have come into contact with, have surrendered a number of their rights, which is completely false. You can never surrender a right. The police, by mere presence and discussion with you, cannot take rights away. However, that is police oppression under the direction of the mayor. There's police oppression that happens all over the country. You're having it in Milwaukee with both the city police chief and the county sheriff, who have said that they're going to pull out their guns and take people down who are carrying exposed, legally, a handgun, take the gun away, hook them up, and then decide whether or not they've got the right to carry the gun. That is police oppression. I am opposed to that. The police have the ability to lie their faces off to you to try and get you to talk. And if you give up your Miranda rights, if you say, I understand them, I'm going to waive those rights. If you waive those rights and you speak to the police and they are allowed to lie to get you to say whatever you want, whatever they want you to, then they can use that against you. They will use that against you. That, to me, is police oppression. And a lot of people have been convicted of crimes in which they did not commit. Or they use those sorts of things to get you to turn over someone else who you may not have any idea of that ever did any sort of crime, and then they get convicted of a crime that they did not commit. I call that to be police oppression, and that's what I'm against. I don't mind law enforcement at all. I support law enforcement. I used to be law enforcement, which is how I feel that I am qualified to sit here and speak my mind on law enforcement. I did the job. I worked the streets, and I know the people I worked with, and I know how the system works. Police oppression is what I'm against. I'm actually working on a couple of shows that are going to be coming up sometime in July, I believe, that we're going to discuss at length how to deal with the police when you come into contact with them. So that is going to be coming up. I'm working quite diligently on those. And things such as when law enforcement is given the order, shoot to kill, such as what happened at Ruby Ridge once upon a time, the legalities, or rather illegalities, of things such as that. So there's more to come. That's why I'd like you to stay tuned each and every day. All right? Police oppression is a real problem in this country if we allow it to continue. We've got to nip this thing in the bud. It's not overly bad just yet. But with the Obama regime in control of the White House, and obviously in control of the House of Representatives, we need to watch ourselves. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you. In Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Have a wonderful day. Lock and load. Pack safe.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Duel Your Freedoms. The Two-Way Radio Show. 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central. Monday through Friday. Oh!